Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Cookie Carnival returns. OA News at OAOA.com. Inflatables, Slime Alley, a rock wall, a slide, and an enticing raffle are just some of the items to look forward to when St. John's Episcopal School's Cookie Carnival returns October 30th. The annual event runs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. in Barns D and E of the Ector County Coliseum. Admission is free. Heather Kirk, interim head of school, Rebecca Grisham, and Friends of St. John's Board President Jennifer Robles are all looking forward to the school's major fundraiser of the year. Kirk said Slime Alley is where you run around and get to silly string each other. There also will be a food booth run by Chuck Wagon Gang member Gabe Grewell, where chopped beef sandwiches, barbecue sandwiches, nachos, hot dogs, chili dogs, sausage on a stick, and hot Cheetos with cheese will be available. An in-person silent auction is planned, and Grisham said helmets from Permian and Odessa High School signed by the entire team on the block, along with tickets to the Houston Texans. I'm excited that we get to do this year, that we get to have the community back together. This is our big fundraiser, so last year we were really short on funds compared to what a normal year is, Robles said. Last year, Kirk said, they did the best they could without having the actual event. They sold raffle tickets as usual and conducted a silent auction, which will be in person this year, but it wasn't the same. Since we couldn't do the actual event, we did things for the kids last year so that they could still have that momentum and that fun within their classrooms, Kirk said. Kirk noted that approximately $8,000 worth of prizes will be available, and tickets are $2. Examples of the prizes are iPads, gift cards, and a lifetime hunting and fishing license, Grisham said. Kirk said her husband was so excited about that prize because it's a $1,800 value. Those who want raffle tickets can call the school. They can come by the school and get one, and they will also be sold at the carnival. The drawing is that night, and you don't have to be present to win. Kirk said they started Cookie Carnival 38 years ago in the parish hall. It was just a small fundraiser for the students, and I'm not sure when the community started coming, but it has grown over the 38 years to thousands and thousands of people, Kirk said. It's a tradition now, not just for St. John's, but for the community. Robles said all of the proceeds for the carnival go back to the school, and they are grateful for all the donations and supports. They hope to raise $75,000 or more. We did go back and forth on whether we should continue and have it at the Coliseum or do something for our children only here at school, Kirk said. They watched the COVID numbers and decided that the Coliseum barns are all open, so there is flowing air, Kirk said. Masks are recommended. She added that raffle tickets have been fun this year as classrooms contests have come along with them. Teachers have dressed up in their pajamas for a day or had a pie thrown in their face. If they sell 31,252 tickets, Kirk said, she will kiss a pig. We purchased 30,000 tickets this year. We had to order more, which is an awesome problem to have. That doesn't mean that they're all sold, but that means that they are out with our students or the teachers or parents, and they're selling them. So we had to order, 5,000 more tickets. But like I said, it's a good problem to have, Robles said. At pep rally is set 9:30 a.m. for October 28th and October 29th, they will set up. Students will drop off pumpkins for judging 8:30 a.m. October 28th, and prizes will be awarded. Take time for your health set. OA News at OAOA.com. Medical Center Health System is hosting a free health and wellness event from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday. Take time for your health will take place at the MCH Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 Highway 191. It is open to the public. The event will feature important health information, screenings, activities, and more. COVID-19 vaccines, blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, triglycerides, and PSA, hands-only CPR, fall risk assessment, adult flu shots, flexibility testing, balance testing, heart attack risk assessment, ask the pharmacist. Prior to the health and wellness event, Mission Fitness will host the Valenzuela Family Memorial 5K run and 2K walk. It will start at 8 a.m. at the same location, and the cost is $25. All proceeds will benefit the family of fallen ECHD police officer Sergeant Daniel Valenzuela, who was killed in a traffic accident with two other family members in September. UTPB to offer early intervention certificate. By OA News at OAOA.com. University of Texas Permian Basin will soon be offering an early intervention specialist certificate that ties in with a needed niche in the community. Information from UTPB details that local early intervention specialist agencies report that there is currently a shortage of professionals in the field, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicates that jobs in early interventions are likely to increase by at least 8% by 2026. Early intervention specialists earn salaries commensurate with those of public school teachers, the information said. Dean of the College of Education, Larry Daniels, said the college received a lengthy letter of support from the Texas Department of Health and Human Services backing it. An early intervention specialist works primarily with children in the first 3 years of life and their families. It's essentially working with children whose doctors have indicated that there could be some developmental concerns, Daniel said. They may also help identify other specialists such as speech therapist, occupational therapist, diagnostic people, because they're really not diagnosticians. They are doing kind of precursory diagnostic just by observing the child's behavior and that sort of thing. But for a person that wants to work with very young children in an education-like setting, because essentially it is educational, it's developmental and educational. Other than maybe going into pediatrics or something more medical, it's one of the job fields where a person could most be able to intervene. Of course, the other areas would be child care, just routine care of children. At the same time the university was talking about the Early Intervention Specialist course, HHS reached out and said they needed more people qualified as early intervention specialists. They'd actually already looked at our current curriculum, and they identified some courses that they thought would meet the academic requirements to get that certification, Daniel said. Daniel said HHS actually sent them a list of their saying HHS thought they would be correct for providing the academic background the early intervention specialist would need. He said the course was just approved in the spring. Daniel noted that it's an 18-hour program. We added only one new course. The new course is an internship class, and we really felt since we were making this a workplace-oriented certificate that we should have an internship course. So we're actually going to have our students identify one of the agencies that does early intervention. And we have requirements for that class, and we actually even have a first draft syllabus of that course, Daniel added. He said he hoped they will have the first students signed up to be part of the certificate program in January. We're just beginning to really market it internally with students, Daniel said. In September 29th interview, we wanted to make sure everything was up into the system correctly. It had to be recognized in our systems as being a program one could actually apply for. Those things take a little time. It's just going through our bureaucracy of getting everything up in the system. He added that this is an industry certification through HHS and not the Texas Education Agency. The program requires students to have a bachelor's degree before they go for the certification. The audience for the degree would likely be child and family studies majors because they are already taking the majority of the coursework. However, Daniel said it is available to any undergraduate student at UTPB. It's set up completely as a certificate that's earned while the student is matriculating. I suppose it's a person stopped out of the school before they completed the bachelor's degree. They would still have that preparation, Daniel said. It's also set up as a post-baccalaureate certificate. This would be a nice way for a person to retool who completed a bachelor's in another area, Daniel said. He added that very much like teaching, there tends to be a shortage of people qualified to do this work. So PermaCare and other organizations like them are generally working hard to try to find more individuals who would be interested, who would be seeking the academic credential so they could then work with them for the workplace part to get them certified with HHS, he said. Obituaries, Jack Beckwith, Odessa, Jackie Jack Ray Beckwith, 76, passed away Saturday, October 23, 2021 in Odessa. He was born November 10, 1944, to Lewis Allen Beckwith and Dorothy Bell Cameron. Jack married the love of his life, June Roberts, on June 14, 1968, in Hobbs, New Mexico. They had three children, Lewis Allen Beckwith, Rebecca Melton, and John Beckwith. Jack was preceded in death by parents Lewis Allen Beckwith and Dorothy, brother Alan Ray Beckwith, sister Doris Smith, Wanda Retzer, and Carol Bishop, grandmother Eula Mae Watson. Jack is survived by his wife, three children, four grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and sister Cheryl Lloyd. A memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday, October 30th at Homeline Baptist Church, 3500 Annetta Drive, Midland. To place an online condolence, please visit www.willow.brk.com. Kenneth Swarb, Monahans. Kenneth Ray Swarb, 86, passed away from this life on Saturday, October 23rd in Monahans, Texas. He was born on December 3, 1934, in Harhoe, Oklahoma, to Luther Simon Asbury Swarb and Mammy Gertrude Swarb. Kenneth Swarb was preceded in death by his wife Laverne Palmer Swarb, his parents Luther Swarb and Gertie Swarb, brothers Easton Swarb and Wayman Swarb, both of Oklahoma, and grandson Nathan Swarb. Kenneth Swarb is survived by sons Steve Swarb and wife Jennifer, Dennis Swarb and wife Tina, and Warren Swarb and his wife Wendy. 6 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren. Ken is survived by brother Harold Swarb and wife Lavana of Maud, Oklahoma, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. George Lee Taylor, McCamey. George Lee Taylor, 82, beloved husband, father, and friend, passed away on October 23rd in McCamey. George was born on November 29, 1938, in Lone Grove, Texas. He married Sylvia Lech of McCamey on February 14, 1963. They celebrated 58 years of marriage together this year. George is preceded in death by his parents, Vaughn and Bessie Taylor, sister Regine Binsky, grandson Clancy Taylor, and brother-in-laws Jim Binskin and Granville Luckman. He is survived by his wife Sylvia Taylor, sons Tommy Taylor of McDonald, Tennessee, Megan and Robert Taylor of Zephyrin, Texas, daughter Darlene Parkes of Midland, sister Pat Luckman of Austin, 3 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 30th, 2021, at the Shaffer Nicholas Funeral Home in McCamey. In lieu of flowers, the family is requesting memorial donations in George's name to the Clancy Taylor Fund at riceconnect.rice.edu/ctaylor. The Clancy Taylor Fund was established to assist English students of Rice University needing assistance to become future educators. Donation in George's name to any other charities will also be appreciated. Rogelio R.J. Suchel, Jr., Odessa. Rogelio R.J. Suchel, Jr., age 30, of Odessa, passed away due to an auto accident in the early morning hours of Saturday, October 23rd. He was born in Odessa on February 14, 1991, to Rogelio Sr. and Miriam Padil Suchel. Those left to cherish his love and memory are his wife, Natalie Suchel, parents, Miriam and Rogelio Suchel, Sr., grandmothers, Sabrina Suchel and Lydia Padilla, sisters, Amber, Alvales, and Arlette Trevaris, nephews, Jaime Alvarez Jr., Pedro Alvarez, and Pablo Alvarez, niece, Jamilexi Alvarez, godson J.J. Sanchez, goddaughter Marlene Ramirez, and several other beloved family members and friends. Visitation at the funeral home begins at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 28, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel, with the rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Friday, October 29th, Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Peaceful Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel. Death notices. Rodolfo Jose Baez Marufo, Odessa. Rodolfo Jose Baez Marufo, 69, died Saturday, October 23rd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martunas Funeral Home. Thomas Jefferson Brooks, Odessa. Thomas Jefferson Brooks, 79, of Monahans, died Thursday, October 21st. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, October 30th at Cornerstone United Pentecostal Church in Monahans. Arrangements are by Anchors West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Vicki Lee Tweedy Holloway Harmon, Odessa. Vicki Lee Tweedy Holloway Harmon, 69, of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 6th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled from 1 to 3 p.m. October 30th at Big Daddy's in Odessa. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home of Midland. Juan Silos Sr., Odessa. Juan Silos Sr., 66, of Odessa, Texas, died Thursday, October 14th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, October 29th at Martinez Funeral Home, outside chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, the Monument Garden section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home of Odessa. Brenda Susan O'Shill Trottier, Odessa. Brenda Susan O'Shill Trottier, 64, of Odessa, died Friday, October 22nd in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Friday, October 29th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Director of Odessa.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday. COVID deaths rise to 26 at MMH. Almost half of virus patients under age 50, 2,000 vaccines administered, by Caitlin Randall. Midland health officials reported Tuesday that the number of COVID-19 patients in the hospital continues to trend downward. Here's what to know from Tuesday morning's press conference. There were 34 COVID-19 patients in the hospital on Tuesday, 25 of which are active cases and 9 are convalescing. The percentage of COVID-19 patients compared to total hospital occupancy has hovered near 20% since the beginning of the month. There were 204 total patients in the hospital Tuesday, and there were 187 visits to the emergency room on Monday. 14 COVID-19 patients were in critical care, and 10 of those patients are considered active cases. The age range for coronavirus patients were 22 to 83 years old, with 47% of patients being under the age of 50. There were 3 breakthrough cases among the hospitalized COVID-19 patients on Tuesday, which means 91% of COVID-19 patients were unvaccinated. 32% of COVID-19 patients were from outside Midland County. There have been 26 coronavirus deaths so far in October. 5 of those patients were vaccinated, and the other 21 were unvaccinated. The positivity rate for testing at Midland Health fell to 12.5% last week. 47.9% of eligible residents in Midland County are fully vaccinated, and 55.3% have had at least one dose. About 2,000 vaccine doses have been administered by Midland Health since their vaccine clinics reopened a month ago. There is still no vaccine mandate for Midland Health staff until the hospital receives further guidance from OSHA. Pharmacists versus Doctors Advice. To Your Good Health for Wednesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm amazed how often advice on medications or vaccinations say, talk to your doctor or pharmacist. How are pharmacists trained, and on what subjects can their advice equal a doctor's? Dr. Roach writes, a doctorate of pharmacy takes, like a medical degree, 4 years after an undergraduate degree. I would say that the pharmacist and the physician have complementary knowledge. Pharmacists are expert in the uses, side effects, and interactions of medications. Pharmacists also act as a check on physicians when we make errors. This is particularly true in complex patients, such as patients with cancer or those who are critically ill. Pharmacists need to be expert communicators with both the physicians and the patients. I often recommend readers consult with their pharmacist. During the course of my writing this column, many readers have presented medication lists where the risk of an adverse drug interaction is very high. Often, multiple physicians are prescribing for the same patient and are unaware of all the medicines a person is taking. An alert pharmacist can be literally life-saving in these situations. Infidelity continues to rock teetering marriage. Dear Abby for Wednesday. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married for 25 years. He has recently started running around with his buddies and partying. He hardly has time for me anymore. I found out he had cheated on me, not once but several times, with different women. I was devastated, so I left for a while, but I decided to try to work things out. During the time I was gone, I ended up cheating as well. I'm sorry for it, but I developed some very real feelings for someone. I haven't seen him in 2 years, but I still feel myself wanting him and wanting to be with him. I love my husband and we are working things out, but I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm in love with both of them. I still talk to the other person via text, but we don't go any further. Distressed in Ohio. Dear Distressed, you may be in love with both of them, but you made a commitment to work things out with your husband. If you are sincere about it, you will have to disengage fully from the man you cheated with and concentrate on your marriage. If you're not sure you can do that, marital counseling may help you decide what your next step should be. But a word of warning, the grass is not always greener once you have jumped the fence. Dear Abby, I was at a bar a few weekends ago and met a handsome stranger who seemed slightly familiar. His name sounded like I had heard it before. We talked for hours, and it felt like we had known each other forever. He walked me back to my apartment, and we shared a kiss on my doorstep. The next morning, I made a horrifying discovery. He's my second cousin. We hadn't seen each other in more than 20 years. When I gave him the news, he told me he still wanted to try for a relationship. I'm confused about what to do and how to feel. Please help. Kissing cousin in Maine. Dear cousin, marriage between second cousins is legal in every state. If you like this man, and it appears you do, let the relationship play out and see where it leads. If you are worried about possible genetic complications, they should be discussed with your physician and his. Genetic testing should put your concerns to rest. Dear Abby, I've been with my boyfriend for 4 years. He talks about marrying me and has even given me an engagement ring. The problem is, whenever I ask him about setting a wedding date, he seems annoyed, like I'm trying to pressure him into marrying me. He gave me the ring almost 3 years ago. Should I end this relationship if we can't get on the same page? Engaged in North Carolina. Dear Engaged, you need to get to the bottom of why he is reluctant. If he's worried about the expense or uncomfortable about the hoopla of a big wedding, you could agree to have a small courthouse ceremony. However, unless your boyfriend, notice I didn't use the word fiancé, can come up with a solid reason for not being ready to follow through on his marriage proposal, ending the engagement is exactly what you should do, because the ring you're wearing is nothing more than a promise ring.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.